Today's daf is Tzadi Heyam and Aleph, and we'll begin on the top of the Amud Kocheles. So a woman paints herself, she paints her eyes. On Shabbos she violates the Malacha of Tzovea, Mishum Tzovas. Godeles, this is a woman who braids her hair, who pokeses, she fixes her hair around. Maybe she makes a bun. Is Mishum Bone, and she violates the Malacha of Binyan. Now we think of Binyan as Gidule Karka, something that's attached to the ground. So the Gemara immediately raises that objection. B'chiderech Binyan B'kach? You know, by building up a hairdo, is that called Binyan? Would you call a hairdresser a builder? And the Gemara says, in. We're going to derive this from the Torah itself, from the very creation of woman. Kididarish Rabbi Shimon ben Manasya, Vayiven Hashem Elokim es Hatzela. If we want to know what constitutes binyan, we're going to go back to the Torah, and we see the word Vayiven. And what did Hashem do at the end of this pasuk? It says that he brought Chava to Adam HaRishon. And what did he do before he... What kind of building was he involved in, Almighty God? Melamed Shekila HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeChava. He braided her hair via Eitzel Hadam, and she brought her to Adam HaRishon. So who's the first hairdresser in human history is the Ribbono Shel Olam. And this indicates how important it was for Hashem to bring the Kala to the Chasan. The Medrash talks about the Malachim who were dancing at that wedding. But Hashem, in His infinite modesty, He was the personal hairdresser for the Chava, for the Kala, and brought the Kala and presented her to the Chasan. We had some big simchas here in our neighborhood last night, two different families engaged their daughters. One of them is gigantic simcha. I mean, she's an older woman who's never engaged, right here in this building. And in order to demonstrate the concept of a hairdresser called a builder, Shekein Bekrachi Ayam Korin Likal Isa Banaisa. In fact, in some of the cities on the seashore, the word that they use to describe a hairdresser who braids the hair of a woman is a builder, banyasa. So you see that godeles, braiding the hair, is called building. And pokeses, as we said before, perhaps means to create a bun in the hair. Rashi seems to offer the suggestion that pokeses means combing the hair. And all this is a very serious business on Shabbos. Tanya, we learned in a brayser, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Godeles Kocheles Upokeses Liatzma Ptur L'Chaverta Chayeves. If a woman tries to be a cosmetician for herself, to paint her eyes, to braid her hair, she's not going to succeed. It won't be a perfect job. It's very hard to do this in the right way. And therefore, that's considered less than the perfect malacha. We have a principle in Shabbos, Meleches Machsheves, and this is not a fulfillment of Meleches Machsheves. It's only if she serves as a cosmetician to beautify another woman, then she can do these malachas in a perfect way, and she will violate those malachas that we spoke about, tzovas and bona. Again, it doesn't have to be a she. V'chein hayu Rav Shimon Elazar Omer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Isha lo tavir srak al paneh mipnei shetzovas. So a woman should avoid using rouge on her face. She dyes her skin. And again, I would assume that we're talking about a malacha d'oraisa in this case, although it's not spelled out perfectly, because in this case he doesn't point out that she's doing it for somebody else. So it could be that when it comes to srak, which is this kind of reddish powder on her face, she can do a good job even for herself. Tana Rabbana, we learned it in a braisa, hacholev v'machabetz v'magaben kigro geres, which means this is what's called the resha, the braisa, and it has three malachas enumerated. We'll have a seifa with another three in a minute. And we're talking about milking an animal. We're talking about straining the milk such that what happens is the liquid part of the milk will drip down through this strainer. And then we have cheese making. And in the process of making cheese, there are clumps of cheese that rise to the surface, and you link them all together, press them, and compress them, and it forms a block of cheese. And these are shiurim in ochlin of a grogeres. The Gemara is going to ask in a minute, what are the avos malachos? In these three cases, we're talking about malachos that are not listed in the Mishnah back in Kol Gadol. But let's go on to the Sefer of the Braisa. Hamachabed v'amarabetz v'arodech alos dvash shogag b'shabes chayev chatas. Now this shogag b'shabes is going back on all told six cases, six malachos. The first three we mentioned earlier, and the second three are sweeping a house and pouring water over the floor to prevent the dust from rising. They didn't have shayish floors like we have. And you have honeycombs, and he removes what's called chalos dvash, which are loaves of honey from the beehive. So he removes these honeycombs for the beehive. Now, if he does any of those six on Shabbos, and he did b'shogeg, he's chayv achatas. This is the first opinion in the Braisa. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, and that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, what I skipped here is Yontif. The Braisa tells us that according to Rabbi Eliezer, if he does this on Yontif, Hazid biyantif loke arboim, he gets 40 malkas if he does this b'mezid. Obviously, in a case of shogeg, there's nothing to discuss. It's a null set, because yantif is a violation of a lav. It's not a chiyuv kares. The only chiyuv chatos in a case of a shogeg is for an avera which had been implemented b'mezid would generate a chiyuv kares. So in yantif, there's nothing to talk about. There's no shogeg and chatas. But as far as a mezid is concerned, he gets 39 malkas. Now, I understand why he would get malkas in the last three cases. But when we go back to the first three cases, hacholev hamachabetz v'amagabem, one could ostensibly argue that those malachos are called ochel nefesh, and the purpose of those malachos is to prepare food. Very difficult to understand why then he would be chai of malchus for those malachos. What I would suggest is Tosus at the beginning of Masechta Beitza quotes Yerushalmi, and Yerushalmi says that not all malachos that are done to prepare food are considered classified as ochel nefesh. It's got to be milisha v'yelech, right? There are 11 malachos at the beginning of the list, starting from planting and plowing, that will culminate with baking a loaf of bread. And lisha is when he has the flour and he adds the water to the flour to make a dough. That's already a malacha that you can clearly see is preparing the food. But earlier malachos, like take for example Mechabetz we said was straining. So on the list of malachos, Borer is before Lisha. And according to Yerushalmi, Ochel Nefesh only applies from Lisha and on in the sequence of 11 malachos. Chachomim Omrim, Echad Zeh V'Echad Zeh, Eino El Mishum Shvus. And here we have a machlokas in the Mefarshim, exactly what the Chachom are referring to. When they say that there's no violation on a Doraisa level of these malachos, are they referring to the last three? Hamachabed, Hamarabed, Varoda Chalos Dvash, and that's the Sefer, or are they making an all-encompassing statement that even goes back to the Reisha? And that means that even the first three cases of Chole, Mechabed, Tzumagabin, according to the Chachamim, are only rabbinically prohibited, but they don't constitute a violation of the biblical Malachos. We'll be inclined right now towards those Rishonim who say that the Chachamim reject Rabbi Eliezer as far as the last three of the Sefer, but they accept Rabbi Eliezer, and there is a Chiyuv Doraisa for the first three. Rav Nachman Bar Gurya Iklo Linarda, on one of his trips to Narda, Rav Nachman showed up in the yeshiva, Bo Mine, and they asked him a question. Cholev Mishumai Machayev. What is the Av Malacha in the case of milking a cow? Or any other animal. Amalei Mishum Cholev. He really was confused about it. All I can tell you is the Brisa says that he's Chayev Mishum Cholev. More than that I can't tell you. Mechabes Mishum Mai Chayev. If he strains the milk. Amalu Mishum Mechabes. Once again, I can't tell you. Megabe Mishum Mai Mechayev. He makes cheese. What's the Av Malach? Amalu Mishum Megabe. So they were very disappointed in Rav Nachman, because in this case he didn't give them any insight or any answer to their question. Amrule, you know, this is very typical in Talmudic style. They use a certain idiomatic phrase when they want to push someone off. So they said, Rabba Katil Kani Bi Agma Hava. Rabcha, meaning that you couldn't be the disciple of a great teacher. Your teacher must have been a reed cutter in a swamp. In other words, he was not a Talmud Chacham, because you didn't give us any insight. I think this was their implicit critique. Instead of saying, you know, you're a reed cutter, they said your Rebbe was a reed cutter. Blame it on the Rebbe. That's how it works in education. You know, you always blame the teachers. No one else is at fault. The students are never at fault. Asa Shoel Be Midrasha. So at this point, Rav Nachman himself, he shows up in Arda. Arda was one of the centers of Torah study at the time of the great Babylonian period. So he comes to the Beis Medrash and he tries to figure out, well, what's the answer to the question? You know, a real Talmud Chacham who's curious wants to know the answer. If he can't come up with it on his own, he's got to seek it out. On Rule, they told him, Cholev Chayev Mishum Mefarik. One of the malachas in the Mishkan was Mefarik. It's actually called, in the language of the Mishnah in Kalal Gadol, it's called Dash Mefarik is very close to Dash. And when you have a something that grows in nature, but it's covered by some sort of a husk or a covering, then when you break it and separate the fruit or the plant itself from its covering, that's called mefare. And here, it seems that, the milk is somehow absorbed into the udders of the cow. And in a sense, you break the milk from the udders, or you extract it from the udders, and that's called mefarik or dash. Again, on this is a gigantic sugya, because ein disha el bigdui kaka, the malach of dash, the Gemara says, is limited to things that grow from the ground. A cow, the last time I checked, doesn't grow from the ground, so that's an issue. Anyway, mechabetz chayv mishum borer, that's simple enough. Right, he has these coagulated pieces of milk, and he strains them in order to remove the liquid, and he uses a kli, he uses a utensil, and therefore he violates Melechus Borer. And cheese making, that's interesting, Chayev Mishum Bona, he's building. So what is the definition of building? Building means when you take distinct pieces and you combine them together to form one whole. And that's what he does in cheese making. And some want to say that that's why Megabin might be usher even on Yontif, because Binyan is a different category. It's not a Melechus Ochel Nefesh in its very nature. Hamachabed Hamarabeitz V'arodeh Chalos Dvash, in the last three cases of the Brisa, which according to Rabbi Eliezer will generate a Chiyuv Chata, Shogeg B'Shabbos Chayuv Chatos, and Hezid B'Yontif Loke, Lokar Boim, Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, Omer Rabbi Lazar, the Amora Rabbi Lazar, my time with Rabbi Eliezer the Tana, what exactly is the violation here of a malacha d'oraisa in these last three cases? He sweeps the floor, he pours water on the ground so that he lays down the dust, he removes, as we said, these loaves, these honeycombs from the beehive. So what's the biblical transgression here? And he quotes a pasuk, and this pasuk in Shmuel is very famous because Rabbi Yonasan Ibishitz wrote a book and he titled it based on this pasuk. He dipped it into the forest of honey. So in one pasuk, the Torah, the Tanakh, is comparing a forest to honey. Is my inyan yar etzel dvash? No, these two entities, a forest and a honey, they don't seem to be connected. I mean, you could find honey anywhere. It doesn't have to be in a forest. El olomar lecha, this is teaching me a hekesh. My yar, just like in the case of a forest, you go to a forest, you cut down trees. Hatolish mena b'shabes chayev chatos. You violate by cutting down trees a malacha called kotzer, k'tzira. Afchalos dvash, so too with regard to these honeycombs that he removes from the beehive, he is considered kotzer. He's considered as if he detached them from the place they grow, and therefore he's chayav mishum kotzer. Now we mentioned that the Chachamim certainly disagree in the last three cases, that's for sure, including Rode Chalos Dvash. And the answer has to be because honeycombs from a beehive is not similar enough to Kotzer to be a Malacha D'Oraisa. It's only also Midrabbana. A Memar Shora Zilcha B'Mechoza. In Mechoza, which was a major city in Bavel, a Memar allowed sprinkling water on the floor in order to lay down the dust. And the question is, how could that be? After all, we just finished saying that Hamachabed or Hamarabetz is the more likely Marabetz is Chayev Chatos, and if not, it's at least according to Rabbanon in an Iser that's biblical in nature. So he says, "Time am I? Why did the Rabbanon say it's Asur? Omer Rabbanon, they were afraid Dilma Asi Lashvuye Gumos." That when you pour water over the ground, over the dust, it might come to flatten out the ground. And flattening out the ground is a malach of boneh. It improves the structure of the ground. Hacha, but here in Mechoza, leka gumos, our floors are flat. They don't have any holes in it. Maybe they're made of shayish. And therefore, the entire logic of the Rabbana and the Chashash and the suspicion doesn't apply. So we see clearly from this sugya of Amemar that at least in the case of the Iser Derabbanon of Merabetz, the Chazal did not enact an absolute Iser under all circumstances, but rather they built the reasoning into the prohibition, into the very enactment itself. And if that reasoning does not apply, then the enactment and the Iser doesn't apply. That's not always true. There are many Gzeres where the Rabbanon take an action and they prohibit it no matter what. Forget about the reasoning for it. Rava Tosfa, okay, this is a different Rava from someplace called Tosfa. Ashkechei l'Ravina, he found Ravina to come, it's Tayer Mehavla. He was very sensitive, and he suffered from the dust that came up into the air from the ground. Amri Le, according to a different tradition, it was Mark Shisha, Rei de Rava, who Ashkechei l'Rav Ashi, he was the one, and he found not Ravina, but it was Rav Ashi, to come at Star Mehavla. He was in in distress because of the dusty air. Omar Le, so he said to him, why are you in such a state of distress? Lo sorale mar lo hadisanya. Is our master not in agreement with a brisa that reads the following? Harotza l'rabbis is based over Shabbos. If a person wants to do this act of merabetz, is mevi areva malea mayim, he could bring a whole basin full of water, and he goes from corner to corner, and in one corner rochets panov, he will wash his hands, his face, bizavizu. He goes to another corner of the house, and he washes his hands. And he goes to the third corner of the house, and he pours the water over his feet, v'nimtza, and an automatic result is habayis misrabeitz me'ela. He achieves what his goal is. There's water that's spread throughout the house, and he's allowed to do so. And the reason he's allowed to do so is because he's not doing the maisa of merabeitz. He's not, you know, systematically, you pay someone to systematically lay the water down across the floor. And it's an indirect result of his action. This is what you call grama, an indirect result. And in a case of an indirect result, at least if we're dealing with a drabanon, because merabeitz is only an isa drabanon, then we can allow it. Amalei lavadatai, you know you're right. I just didn't think of it. Thanks for reminding me. Tana, in fact, we have a brisa. Isha chachama, a woman who has wisdom, merabetzes beis of a Shabbos. She can actually accomplish this goal of wetting the floor so that the dust will not fly up in the air and pollute the air. And has she achieved that goal? She washes her dishes in one corner, then she goes over to another corner, goes to a third corner, and before you know it, the whole floor is sprinkled with water. Va'idna, the Sfirlon Karevi Shimon Shari Afilu Chatchila. Now the Gemara says the following: we have an opinion of Reb Shimon, appears throughout the entire Masechta Shabbos, almost on every page, is Dovr Shein Miskavin is if a person does an act, and as a result of that permissible act, something, some halacha is a result, but he didn't have in mind deliberately to do that malacha, is that according to Rav Shimon, we could certainly say that it's permissible. Now, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, but the Gemara is saying that we paskin like Rav Shimon. And once we paskin like Rav Shimon, then if a person simply does this act of merabetz, and he flattens out the dust, and as a result, what might happen is there might be some leveling out, mashvegumos, of the holes in the floor, but his interest and his intention is simply to settle the dust, then even though holes might be leveled as a result, that's a dover shein miskavet. And therefore, we don't have to worry about merabetz. So it's really interesting, because we went from one extreme to the other, and in the middle we had a compromise. We had the Shita Rabbi Eliezer, who says that merabetz is chayev mishum leches bona. That's a doraisa. We had the Rabbanon that said that, no, we're going to reduce it down to a rabbinic level. Now, we're going to reduce it to a heter lechatchila, and it's going to be mutter because we paskin like Rav Shimon. And this leads us to the mission on the bottom of Daf Tzadi Hei Amud Aleph. Hatolesh me otzitz nokuv chayav v'she'eno nokuv poter. Rav Shimon poter bozeh u'bozeh. So now we're talking about an otzitz. An otzitz is a kli, it's a utensil, and he plants something in the utensil, in this, we'll call it a pot, a flower pot. Now the flower pot has soil in it, and it's certainly not growing, whatever's growing in the flower pot is not growing from the karka itself, it's growing from the soil inside the flower pot. However, according to the Tanakama, the unidentified first Tana, you could be chayav for tolesh. Tolesh means detaching, which is a tolda of meleches kotzer of reaping, even in the case of an otzitz. How is that so? And the answer is because it's nokuv. So there are two types of flower pots. One had holes on the bottom, and therefore by placing it down on the ground, the plant would be nourished directly from the ground through these holes. That's called an otzitz nokuv. And our Mishnah holds that an otzitz nokuv is considered growing from the ground, and anything that grows from the ground, if you detach it, you violate the malach of kotzer. Then there's another category, another type of a pot, which is eino nokuv. So it's flat on the and enclosed, hermetically closed on the bottom. It doesn't suck up the nourishment from the ground. It's clearly tolish min hakarka. It's not connected to the karka. And anything that's not growing from the karka, there's no malach of reaping. I mean, this has to do with Shemitah here in Israel, if you know anything about hydroponics. I mean, they grow things in water, and they're not growing directly from the ground. That's not considered growing from the ground. And the nafkamina here is going to be as far as meleches tolesh is concerned. So in the case of an otzitz nokuv, you are chayav for meleches tolesh, because since it's nokuv, it's perforated, it is considered like it's growing in the ground itself. If on the other hand it's eino nokuv, then it's growing in a pot, and it's not growing in the ground. And therefore he's not chayav from meleches tolesh. However, Rav Shimon disagrees. He holds that even in the case of a perforated flower pot, nokuv, nevertheless, it's still not considered growing from the ground. It's primarily growing from the soil that's in the flower pot. To some extent, it sucks up nourishment from the ground, but that's sort of secondary, that's not primary. And therefore, it's considered tolesh min hakarka, and there's no malach of tolesh on something that's already tolesh min hakarka. Rami le Abai le Rava v'yami le Rabbi Chia Barav le Rav. Tanan. We learned in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon poter baze u baze. According to Rabbi Shimon, even in the case of an otzitz nakuv, it's considered detached from the ground. Alma nakuv le Rabbi Shimon. We see that according to Rav Shimon, there's no difference between a perforated flower pot and a flower pot that's absolutely solid on the bottom. Verminu, and now we're going to ask a contradiction from another statement of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon, in this second statement, which is going to contradict Rabbi Shimon in our Mishnah, is talking about a different halacha, and that's what's called machshirim, or hechshel lekabel tumah. Anything that grows in order for it to become susceptible to tumah, number one, it has to be detached from the ground, and number two, it has to come in contact with one of the seven mashkim, the seven liquids that are makshir, something to kabel tumah. Now, let's read the second statement of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ein bein nakuv l'sheino nakuv, that for all dinim, we should equate a perforated flower pot with an unperforated flower pot, and here we turn to Daf Tzadi Heyman Beis, with the exception of one halacha. And the Gemara thinks that that exception should also have an impact on Meleches Tolesh on Shabbos. What is that exception? Ela lahachshir zroim bilvad, which means the following, that if you have zroim, something that's growing, and we want to know whether it is susceptible to tumah, and if it comes in contact with one of the various liquids, there are seven of them, water, dew, wine, oil, blood, milk, bees, honey, fine. The hechsher, when it comes into contact with any of these foods, would only apply if it's detached from the ground, if it's already tolish min hakark. And here, Rabbi Shimon makes a distinction between the two types of atzitzim. And he says that if you have an atzitz nakuv, then that's considered growing from the ground. And therefore it's not susceptible, even if it comes in contact with one of the seven liquids, to Kabbalah's tumah. However, in contrast, if you have an atzitz she'eno nakuv, then it's in a kli. It's in a utensil. Otzitz is a pot, which is a utensil, and it's completely detached, therefore, from the karka. And it's like any other plant, which, if it comes in contact with a liquid, it's mukshal lekabel tumah. But we see clearly from this brisa that Rabbi Shimon maintains a distinction between the two categories of otzitz. And the issue at stake over here is whether or not the otzitz is part of the karka or it's a separate entity. Well, in the case of otzitz nakuv, where it's perforated, Rabbi Shimon says it doesn't become mukshal kabel tumah when it comes in contact with the liquid because it's considered attached to the ground. Well, if it's attached to the ground, then Rabbi Shimon should have said that if you detach it from the ground and you take this plant out of the otzitz nakuv, then you should be chayav for meleches tolesh. Amalei, so Rava answered, or Abaye, depending upon who the tradition was, L'chol mili, as far as all dinim in the Torah, Rabbi Shimon kitolish mashvle, he considers an otzitz nakuv as if it was detached, and therefore you're not chai from aleches ktsira or tlisha when you take it out of an otzitz, even though the otzitz is nakuv. It's in a pot, and the very fact that it's in a pot, that by definition separates it from the ground. It's not mechubel karka, but shiny linyan tumah. Tumah is the only difference as far as machshirim is concerned. That Torah ribsa Torah tahara Eitzel Zeroyim. There's an extra pasuk from which we learn that the Torah expanded Tara. Shenemar al kol zera zorua sher yizora. The extra words in this pasuk, and they're coming to expand the Tahara aspect, which with regard to Zeroyim, so that even though we consider an Otzitz Nakuv insofar as it's inside a Kli to be separate from the Karka, that's why you're not Chayiv for Tolesh, nevertheless, we're going to consider it as if it was part of the Karka, it was attached to the Karka as far as Tumah V'Tahara is concerned. And as I said before, anything that's attached to the Karka that's growing from the ground is not Makabel Tumah, even if it comes in contact with any of the seven Mashkin. And we're going to extend that halacha of Tara, meaning the exclusion of HaMachshirin, to the case of an Otzitz Nakuv, but that's based on a special ribui. So we have not a rule, but rather an exception to the rule. In other words, to summarize what we're learning here, the Gemara maintains that according to Rabbi Shimon, the status of an Otzitz Nakuv is that it's considered inside a kli, and it's separated from the ground. And that's true for all dinim. The only exception is going to be the case of Hechsher LeKabel Tumah, and that's based on a special ribui, and therefore we're going to consider this Otzitz Nakuv as if to some extent it is attached to the Karka. It's, you know, unique, it's got some minimum nourishment from the Karka, and that minimum nourishment is enough to exclude it from that which applies to all plants that are detached, namely they become Mukhshar LeKabel Tumah. Now, I won't say until now, this is the easy part of the daf, believe it or not. Now we get to the real challenging part, so we'll see if we could do it. This is the sugya of Rabbi Zeira, that's what we call it. Boy mineya hu saba mi Rabbi Zeira. Now, in this context, the phrase ahu saba, an elderly gentleman, means a great Talmud Chacham. Now we're going to see how, on the one hand, this elder came in from Rabbi Zeira to ask him a question, but on the other hand, he was really very analytic of Rabbi Zeira, and he's going to take Rabbi Zeira's response to his question and compare it to something else that Rabbi Zeira said on a different occasion. And he's going to really do an analytic job. Shoresh keneged nekev Mali Omar Rabbi Shimon. What would Rabbi Shimon respond in a case where he puts a plant into a pot, the pot is perforated, and he organizes in such a way, right, every plant inside a pot has a root, and then it has the stem. The root of this plant is directly over the hole, such that it gets direct yunika from the karka. In other words, even though Rabbi Shimon said that a plant in a pot is in a utensil, and insofar as it's in a utensil, it's not considered part of the karka, it's not attached to the karka, but what about a case where he put a plant inside a pot, and he aligned the root of the plant directly aligned with the hole at the bottom of this perforated pot, such that the root is sucking up its nourishment directly from the karka. Maybe in that case, Rabbi Shimon would agree that it's not considered detached, but rather it's growing from the ground. And the nafkamina would be that he would be chaya from Aleches Tolesh Ishtik. So Rabbi Zeira apparently was so confounded by this question, it was such a profound question, that he didn't have a response. He didn't have anything in his mouth to say. However, let's go on with the story of this elderly gentleman. Zimnechad, on another occasion, Ashkeche, he was probably in a lecture, participating. The Yosef Akomer, he was sitting there, and Rav Zera said the following. This is another statement of Rav Zera. Umod Rav Shimon. The Rav Shimon agrees that Yochayev, in the case of Shimnikev, now he's talking about Tara, Shimnikev Bichdei Taraso, In other words, in this case, he had a major hole in the kli. Now, what is a major hole in a kli? Well, let me first tell you conceptually, and then we'll see practically how to flesh it all out. A major hole in a kli conceptually means that the kli is no longer functional, and therefore it loses its status in halacha legally as a kli. And once it loses its status as a kli, then it's considered part of the karka. Right? Because the only reason an otzitz is not considered part of the karka is because of the status of the kli. Once I break the kli in such a way that it no longer has the status of a kli, now it's part of the karka. Because as we said before, it sucks up the nourishment of the karka. And in that case, it would be tar, meaning even if it came in contact with one of the seven mashkim, it would be tar because it's now part of the karka, because the kli is no longer a kli. Amalei, when this elderly gentleman heard the shtikel Torah of Rav Zeira, he said to him, I have a kal v'chomer. In other words, I don't understand why you were dumbfounded when I asked you the question about an otzitz nakuv when the root of the plant is directly on top of the hole and nourishes from the kli. Hashta, now in the case that I asked you earlier, Shoresh Kenegin Nakov, Kenegin Nekev, Boy Minach, Velo Amatlo Midi, I stumped you, so to speak, meaning you didn't have a clear response as to the status of an Otzitz Nakov according to Rav Shimon, when it's Shoresh Keneged HaNekev, is Nikev Bichdei Taraso Miboy? I don't understand your logic. It really makes no sense. You're not being consistent, he said. Because if I have to compare these two cases and determine which one is considered Mechuba Lakarka, then certainly my case that I asked you is much more mechubra lekarka than your case. Your case, Rabbi Zeira, where you considered it mechubra lekarka, was nikev. Nikev means that the pot was cracked, it was broken. So you now have some sort of a halachic, legal sense that the plant inside the kli is no longer inside a kli, and therefore it's nourishing from the karka. I gave you a more profound case where it's nourishing from the karka, where the roots themselves inside the otzitz are sucking up the nutrients from the karka. So if you went ahead and you were absolutely certain that in the case of Nikev, that's enough to make it mechuba lekarka. Why? Because it's not technically a kli, even though, again, you know, it's still, even if it's cracked, but it's still separating, you know, the plant within this otzis from the ground. But what about my case, where the root of the plant is directly aligned to the whole of the karka? Amar Abaye. Abai wants to try to defend Rav Zeira, and he says, "Vi itmar lahad Rav Zeira, hachi hu de itmar." Let's understand Rav Zeira in the following way: Moda Rav Shimon shem nikev lamata miravius. Okay, now we're talking about a case where the bottom part of this otzitz was so perforated, in other words, somehow the openings, the holes got so wide that what's left inside this, what's left of this pot is not enough, because of the major hole in the bottom, to contain a revius of liquid. What it means is that if you have a small crack in a pot, then maybe some liquid will drip out, you know, in small drippings. But ultimately, you know, a major amount of the liquid will remain inside the pot if the hole is small enough. However, Rabbi Zeira's case of Umoda Rab Shimon was a case where Nikev, the hole which was located on the bottom of the flower pot, was so profound, it was so wide, that it couldn't even contain liquids. Now, if that be the case, then what's happening here is that we consider everything that's inside the pot, right, inside the otzitz, to be mechuba lekarka. He's Michaya from Aleches Tolesh in Rab Zeri's case, because basically this kli has been so fundamentally damaged and cracked that it really is completely smashed. Now, what Abai is basically saying is that once the kli cannot hold a revius of liquid, so that if you would pour liquids, let's say, into this otzitz, would flow out of the kli to such an extent that the kli would not even be able to hold even a revius, then that means that the kli is considered non-existent. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon, the way Rabbi Zeira says it, would be moda that the plant and the roots of the plant are growing from the karka. It's a very radical kind of a breakage in the kli. In a minute, we're going to learn about five different levels of breakages. But it's such a radical breakage that this kli doesn't even have the status of a gistera. Again, we're going to learn in a minute what a gistera is. And therefore, it's completely out of the ballpark. And anything inside this kli is not really in a kli. It's really growing in the ground. But your case, Hahu Saba, when you asked the question to Rabbi Zeira, you had a kli. But the whole of the kli was aligned with the root of the plant. That's already a different story. That perplexed Rabbi Zeira, because since the kli still has the same kli, it could be that Rabbi Shimon's position is not based on measuring yinika. You know, is it 20% nourishing from the ground? Is it 60% nourishing from the ground? That's not relevant. What's relevant is, does the otzitz have a status of a kli? And if it has a status of a kli, then a plant inside a kli is not in the ground. You know, there's a tug of war here. They're two antithetical concepts. There's no middle ground here. It's either karka or it's kli. So that when Rabbi Zeira was absolutely certain that it becomes karka, that's because it's no longer a kli. It can't even hold a revius of liquid. But when it could hold a revius of liquid, just that you situated the pot in such a way, or more precisely, you situated the root of the plant in its relation to the hole in the pot in such a way that it upgrades the yinika, that has no necessary, that's not necessarily going to be machria. That's not enough to convince us with all certainty that will establish the halacha, because again, if you're dealing only with yinika, then the zaken is right that here you set it up in such a way that you have upgraded the yinika from the karka. Maybe we should consider it now as being mechuba lekarka. But if we look at it from a purely halachic perspective, an abstract perspective, it still is a kli. The otzitz, even though it has holes in it, is not removed from its status as a kli, and therefore it's not, again, in one side of the suffix of Rabbi Zeira, it's not considered mechuba lekarka. Now the Gemara goes into issues about holes in kelim. Amar Rava, chamesh midos bekli cheres. In other words, if you're grading holes in earthenware, then there are five different gradations. And these are all relevant to the laws of Tumah V'Tara, and also, as we'll soon see, to Mechatos. And let's keep in mind that the function of an earthenware kli is for food. In other words, we store food in an earthenware pot. That's its primary function. When we talk about food, then we usually talk about a kezias, right? An olive's worth. That's usually the minimum of a foodstuff that has any sort of significance in halacha. So if you're gonna get a hole in an earthenware utensil, which is meant to be a receptacle for food, and the hole is such that it can't even hold on to a kezias worth, because if you threw in an olive, it's going to just fall out through this hole, then it no longer is a kli. But there are different gradations. One is nikev kimotzi mashke. In other words, what happens is that the hole is large enough for liquids to leak out. And for solids, you need a more profound hole. But for liquids, it could be a minimum hole. And generally speaking, since it could still function in many ways, people hold on to such a kli, it retains its status of a kli. However, it's tahir milatami gistera. Gistera would mean that if, let's say, you had a piece of the kli that broke off, and that piece could hold something. What could it hold? It can't hold much if it's a shard, if it's a small piece. But if it could hold liquids, a certain amount of liquids, then it's considered a kli, and it's makabel what's called tumas gistera. But here, because it has a minimum hole such that liquids would leak out, then even if a shard would break off from this kli, and that shard has a leakage to it, then it's worthless. In other words, in Hilchas Tumah V'Tara, it doesn't even have that basic status as a gistera, which has a certain status in Tumah V'Tara. Then we go on to number two. Oh, wait a minute. However, Adayin Kliu, the status of the utensil is that it's still a kli. And the reason for that is, as I said before, even though there's a crack in such a way that liquid starts seeping out, he would still maintain ownership over the kli. He's not going to throw it into the rubbish pile, because he's going to put a shard to patch it up. But a shard, if it itself is leaking, you'd have to add another shard to the first shard. So that shard you're going to throw away. So what's the significance of the status of the kli when liquids would start seeping out because of the hole? Is l'kadish bo mechatos, right? So they took the parah duma and they burnt it, and they took the ashes and they put it into a kli, and the Torah describes this in great detail in Parshas Chukas, and there was water in the kli, and they mixed the water with the mechatos, with the afer of the parah, and that kli is valid even though there's a leakage for a small hole for liquids. But nikev kikones mashke, let's say now the hole got a little bit larger, and that means kikones mashke, that if, let's say, you put the kli into water, you know, not submerge it, but it's floating on water, the water would start seeping into the kli. And then it's tarmi to kadish bo mechatos. In other words, this kli cannot be used with the concoction of mechatos, because it's already an inferior kli. Vadayin kliu lahakshir bo zroim, but nevertheless, it's considered a kli, so that if there are plants growing inside this kli, then they will be makabel tuma, because they're considered zroim in a kli. But nikev kishoresh katan, if it had a hole the size of a root, a small root, tar milahakshir bozroim. Okay, it is already tar in the sense that it's no longer a kli, it's considered now part of the karka, and if it comes in contact with any of the mashkim, it remains tor. But vadayin kliu lekabel bo zaysim, right? The hole is not so large that a zayis would fall through. It's, let's say, a hole that's a half the size of a zayis, and therefore it still has the status of a kli. Why? Because a kli cheres is for food, and the minimum shear of food is going to be a kezayis. But nikev kimotzi zaysim, once it gets to the point where the hole is the size of what? Of a zayis. A zayis would fall through it, then he's going to ready throw out the kli into the rubbish bin, and therefore it's no longer a kli. Unless, adayin kli hu lekabel bo rimonim. If he designates this kli, he doesn't want to throw it in the rubbish, he wants to use it to hold on to a larger fruit, a rimon, a pomegranate that's much larger than the zayis, the hole will not be large enough so that the rimon will fall out, then it's still considered a kli. But now we get to the lowest level, nikev kemotzi rimonim, the size of the hole is greater than that of a rimon, so even a pomegranate wouldn't be able to be held up in a receptacle of that. So a tar miklum, it doesn't have any status of tara. I mean of a kli. V'im hukaf tzomid pasil ad shi yifchas or shi poches rubo. So that if, let's say, this utensil was sealed by a cover, again this is Parshas Chukas, then usually when it's sealed by with a cover, which is called Tzomid Pasil, then if it finds itself in an Ola mess, then it protects that which is inside of it, the contents of the Kli, from being susceptible to Tumas mess, and Sheyifchas Rubo, until he breaks off most of the Kli. Once he breaks off most of the Kli, then it cannot even serve as a matzil to save the contents of the kli if it's inside an ohel, even though it's sealed with a cover. Amar Avasi shamati kli cheres shiuro kemotzi rimon. So he disagrees with Rava, and according to his tradition, if you have a kli cheres, an earthenware kli, and it has a hole that's large enough to let a pomegranate go through, then it is automatically tahar. It loses its status as a kli. Whereas Rava says that if it could still hold on to a pomegranate under certain conditions, if he designates it as such, then it's still a kli. Amalei Rava, you know what? Maybe you didn't hear it properly. Shema lo shamata ela b'mukaf Tzomid Pasil. In other words, that halacha that you heard about a hole that's large enough for a pomegranate to go through, that was only relevant to the law of Tzomid Pasil. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute, if it has a hole that a pomegranate goes through, is that enough to mean that it's outside of the halacha, it's excluded from Tzomid Pasil? Amar Rava hu diomar Tzomid Pasil ad sheyifchas rubo. Rava said that as long as you have most of the kli and only 49% of the kli is broken off, it still saves that which is inside of the kli as a tzomid pasil, lo kasha. So we're looking on daf tzadi vav and aleph, ha barav ravei vaha bezutre. If you're talking about a very large piece of earthenware utensil that's very large, that's called rav ravei, then as long as most of the kli is still intact, that's enough to establish the halach of tzomid pasil, as we said before, to save the contents of the kli from contracting tumah in an ohel ames. But if you have a small kli, then once it's already got a hole the size of a pomegranate, then it's already no longer in the parsha of tzomid pasil, and it cannot protect its contents from being susceptible to tumah. Let's just review what we said earlier. An earthenware utensil, which is typically made to hold food, is considered fit for holding food as long as it can retain olives.
So a utensil with a hole the size of a small root is considered a utensil with respect to tumah because it could still hold olives. And people will discard earthenware utensils once there's a hole the size of an olive. And therefore, an earthenware utensil with an olive size hole is no longer considered a utensil. Now, if someone designates his utensil to hold pomegranates, then the measure, as far as the kli is concerned, is can it hold pomegranates? So once it was designated as a pomegranate container, it would remain within the parish of Tumah unless it develops a hole that's large enough, the size of a pomegranate, so that a pomegranate will fall through. An ordinary utensil becomes tahor through an olive-sized hole unless it was redesignated to hold pomegranates. Now, Rav Ashi's statement contradicts Rava, because Rava said that an ordinary earthenware utensil loses its susceptibility, its status as a kli, as far as tumah is concerned, once it has a hole small enough to let olives pass through. But Rav Ashi had said that an earthenware utensil that is prescribed measure in regard to losing susceptibility is a hole large enough to let a pomegranate through. And Omele Rava, Shemelo Shamata Lebemukaf Samid Pasil. Perhaps you didn't hear that measure cited, a pomegranate, except with regard to earthenware utensil surrounded by a sealed cover. And if the earthenware utensil was covered with a sealed lid, then tumah does not enter it unless it was perforated with a hole the size of a pomegranate. Once it's perforated with a hole of the size of a pomegranate, then even though it's covered with a sealed lid, tumah will enter into it. So even though a utensil with a sealed cover will protect that which is inside from tumah, but if there's a large break in the kli, that destroys its effectiveness and it's no longer a barrier to tumah. As far as its own tumah is concerned, klicharis depends upon the shear of zayis. Okay then, so we're here on Daf Tzadivavam at Aleph, and the Mirtz Hashem will finish up the perek tomorrow.